Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. You'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalog of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. Well, we will get started on today's episode where we will be talking to one Melissa Brew. Melissa Brew is the owner of Click and Repeat, a marketing agency focused on helping dog trainers improve their presence online with awesome websites, custom logos, and marketing advice. She's also one of the co-founders of Dog Trainers Umbrella, which is dedicated to debunking the myth that dog trainers have to choose between doing what they love and making a good living by helping dog trainers build thriving businesses. Yes, dog trainers can make six figures. What? She has over 10 years experience in marketing, doing everything from running a six-figure marketing budget and leading a full team to playing solo marketer for a small startup to now running her own business. That means no matter where you are in your journey, she can help you apply marketing best practices to bring in new clients, the good kind. She is also the resident marketing geek at the Fenzi Dog Sports Academy, where she teaches classes on marketing and website building, hosts their weekly podcasts, and runs the webinar and workshop programs. She currently lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, with her English cocker Levi and her tuxedo kitty Piper. You can find her posting occasionally on Instagram and more regularly on Facebook in the variety of groups she helps run. Want to learn more? Check out her website at www.clickandrepeat.com. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Melissa to the show today, who's patiently waiting by North Carolina. Melissa, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy.
I'm super excited to be here, Ryan. This is so much fun. A little bit of a insider baseball for everybody listening, but Ryan and I have actually been talking for quite a while now today. So I'm excited to kind of flip the script and talk a little bit about marketing stuff.
Yeah, we just recorded an episode for Fenzi. So a few months since that one was released by the time this one comes out. I'm more organized than I've ever been in my entire life, and we've got podcasts scheduled for the next couple of months. Thanks to Rose Horn, ATA's Jedi Master. But hey, I want to shout out and let people who might not be aware know the contribution you made to Lemonade Conference. I know that was such a appreciated and attended event from Animal Training Academy members and members of our audience. And I think you're one of the few people I know of that has a life that has tasks in it similar than I. So running the Fenzi web, what do you guys call them? Webinar? Workshop programs? I call them web classes. I feel like 5 years ago, everyone was really confused about what a webinar was. Now people know. So I chose web class and we kind of stuck with that. And I kind of forget they're called other things. But also, and doing the podcast show for Fenzi, but also you put a ton of effort into the Lemonade Conference and organizing that. So gratitude to our audience, from our audience, for the ripples that the work that you're doing is making around the globe, all the way here in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's certainly a big project, but it's so much fun to put it together, and it's so awesome to see the impact it has on the community. How excited folks get, how into it they get. And all the fantastic learning that happens, right? We have such a great set of presenters, including you. You came and you talked for us this year, which was awesome.
That was fun.
It was good to hear your story there. So,
are you doing every single webinar and workshop? on Finzi, or is there a team of you? How does that work?
So I run the programs for the most part in the back end. So the webinars, I schedule them, I show up and host them most weeks. So folks that join us for webinars on Thursdays are very used to seeing my face. For the longest time, that was my life every single Thursday. Recently, we've added some folks to the Finzi team. So Amy and Terry occasionally cover for me now for webinars. For the workshop program, on the back end, we do have a team that helps out. But again, I'm the one kind of coordinating with the presenters to figure out when things are going to happen and making sure that all the pieces kind of come together, right? So making sure that things get added to the website and folks log on to watch their presentation for the day that it's actually there for them. So.
And that's a pretty amazing job.
Yeah.
I kind of grin when I say that word. I don't like that word.
That word you don't like, yeah.
The thing you do to put bread on the table. What you get to connect with all of these amazing humans and animal trainers consistently on a weekly basis. Well, what's your favorite part about doing that job?
Oh, goodness. So FDSA is overall a fairly small chunk of my week. I do it about 10 hours a week for them. But specifically the work I do there, I think it's been a really neat opportunity to get to know people in the industry who I might not otherwise have had a chance to have a personal relationship or conversation with, right? So because I host the podcast, if there's somebody like a Ken Ramirez that I'm like, I would love to have a conversation about his book, I get to invite him on and I get to actually ask him about the book, right? I talked to Kathy Sadeo last week. It'll have been quite a while by the time this comes out. But we had a huge conversation last week all about some of the stuff she's doing with her Lima Beings project with her and Chris Pockel. And just like being able to have some of those behind the scenes conversations and then record bits and pieces of that and learn from, for lack of a better term, the greats, right? Like the industry greats. It's such a privilege, and it's so much fun to be able to sit down and say, you know, I was thinking about that thing, and you talked about XYZ, and here's what I got out of that, and was that kind of where you were going with it? And to be in that situation where they're, you know, engaging in that conversation, it's just so fun.
Is there any particular piece of content or episode that kind of really resonated with you? For example, one for me was Petra Edwards talking about her journey of compassion fatigue and burnout, and that kind of made me go, oh wow, like I am experiencing some of these things, and you know, I'll never forget that. Is there any similar experience you've had creating episodes?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the early episodes that had a big impact on my training. So specifically, you know, a lot of what I do in my life is business related, right? But folks listening, at least, will appreciate this in the training perspective. I was talking to Sue Alsby, and she said something, and I'm totally going to misquote her, but she said something along the lines of, you wouldn't leave the house without getting dressed. You shouldn't train your dog if you don't have their focus, right? And that was like, it's such a small, obvious piece of advice, right? Of course you need your dog's attention before you start to train something. But at the time I was working through some of Deb Jones' materials around focus and how you kind of teach that and get that buy-in. And the two pieces just clicked in my brain, and really kind of changed how I think about structuring training sessions and making sure that I have my learner opt in a really obvious way before I try to teach anything new. Right. So for me, that was a big aha.
And how does that make you feel if you reflect? And I don't know if you have, but I'm sure you get, if you're like me, you get people writing in and expressing gratitude and sharing what little one-liners or stories that guests shared that had a similar influence on their training and on their life than you just shared with us. How do you feel about, I mean, that the ripples that the work you do can create that you're probably not even aware of.
Yeah. Sometimes it's almost overwhelming, right? Like somebody will reach out and they'll be like, this had such a huge impact, or I feel like I know you because I listen to the podcast every week. And I love that. I totally love that people are being positively influenced by the work that I'm doing. But at the same time, sometimes it's like, oh, wow, I, you know. for lack of a better phrase, I call myself socially awkward, right? So like to have somebody come up and be like, you are so awesome and I know all the stuff that you do and I follow you in all these ways. And it's like, that's fantastic. I don't know you though. So now I'm all intimidated by the fact that you're impressed by me. I feel like I have to live up to your standards, right? So it's awesome. And I love that I can have that impact. And at the same time, it's a little intimidating.
Is that something that you might label as imposter syndrome, or is it something different?
I don't usually think of it as imposter syndrome, but maybe it is. Maybe my definition in my head of imposter syndrome isn't accurate. But I don't know. For me, it's just I'm not always sure how to approach a conversation where somebody knows more about you than you know about them, you know? So sometimes it's hard to, you and I just had conversation about crucial conversations, right? And so it's hard to kind of get into that curiosity mindset if you feel like the person already kind of knows a whole lot about you, for me at least. So I don't know if it's imposter syndrome or not, but it's certainly a different feeling, right?
Yeah. Cool. And how did you get started? I'm curious to hear how you landed up or ended up doing marketing and stuff nowadays. Was it through first becoming a dog trainer, or did you become a dog trainer after the marketing? Like, what is your order? Take us back and share with us your journey and how you got into positive reinforcement training and where marketing came into it, or vice versa.
All right. It's a long story. So I'll give you the long version.
I'll make a cup of
fresh cup, right? So I grew up in the dog world. Both of my grandmothers breed different breeds. My dad's mom bred poodles while I was growing up. And my mom's mom only recently stopped breeding English Cocker Spaniels. My English Cocker Spaniel is from her lines. And my parents met in a junior handler class. So dogs have always been like a huge part of my life, right? I used to tag along when my grandmother would teach obedience classes at the local AKC club. But back then, positive reinforcement wasn't really making the waves it is today. So I absolutely was exposed to those other more traditional methods early on. And I knew kind of from an early point that I wanted to be involved in that world in some way and wasn't really sure what that would look like long term. So off to college. In college, I studied English and marketing, and I thought I wanted to be a freelance writer. That's what I thought I wanted to do with my life. Work for myself and write for magazines primarily. Or maybe be a book editor, or maybe edit videos, or, you know, typical college stuff. I got a master's in publishing. And the part of publishing that really sucked me in was, how do you use words to sell stuff? So that was not, it was not a big journey, right, to go from that to content marketing, which I know you're super familiar with. But I didn't necessarily start there professionally. So I had this degree and I had this interest. My thesis was on business models for digital magazines. How's that for an outdated topic these days? But out of school, I got a job working for a pet magazine. So I edited for a business-to-business pet magazine and started doing some freelance stuff on the side. And from there, I just got sucked more and more into the marketing side of things and less in the writing side of things. Most of my jobs that I've been in for any period of time have been tied into the dog world in one way or another. So I wrote for the pet magazine, and then I did some work for their sister publications. And then eventually, after I moved out of New York City, because having a dog in New York City is not easy, I did get my own dog. I got a German Shepherd named Riley, and I got super interested in training. And so I was taking her to classes, and the instructor decided that I should start teaching for her instead. So I got sucked into that world, and I did some training on the side for a while, only part-time, while starting my own business. So about then is when I started actually running my own stuff, doing, at that time, mostly editing stuff. And it wasn't really until I started working with Fenzi that I started looking at actually working with dog trainers specifically in a professional way. So I'd done some advising when I worked with, when I worked for the dog trainer, right? Like we'd talk about her email marketing, we'd talk about her marketing stuff. But it wasn't really until I was offering those things to FDSA as a client that I began to recognize the need in the industry for that stuff and began to kind of get sucked into all of that. That world. But pretty quickly after beginning to do that stuff, it was really clear there was a big need for it. And that kind of brings me to where I am today, where that's my 9 to 5, or as I'm sure you know, sometimes 9 to 12, as in midnight, day job, right? It's what I do from the time I get up until the time I go to bed, with rare exception. So specifically for FDSA, because I get this question a lot, how did you end up doing stuff with FDSA? And it's played a huge pivotal role in deciding what I wanted to do with my life as an adult, and what my goals are going forward. I showed up at camp as a volunteer. So FDSA once a year hosts training camp. It's an in-person event. It's coming around next May in Ohio, for those listening who are in the States. And all I did that first year was volunteer. So I followed around an instructor. I helped them show up to their things on time. I made sure they had their water and their snacks and their whatever, right? But afterwards, I was very sure I wanted to be more involved. Very sure. And so I reached out to Terry and I reached out to Denise and I was like, hey, are there ways for me to be more involved? Are there ways for me to step up in the FDSA community and play a bigger role? And they were super responsive to that. And we're like, okay, well, here's a thing that we need some help with. Are you interested in doing this? And at the time, it was processing scholarship requests. And so I would help with that piece of things on a volunteer basis. And eventually, I approached Denise with the idea for the podcast and was like, I want to do a podcast. And I have a feeling, since I want to do it on dog training, that I'm going to want to interview like 90% of your staff. Are you cool with that? And she was like, actually, let me hire you to do that for me instead. So we created the podcast and it's kind of all been, you know, fun from there. That was a really long answer.
That was standard length. I think we can unpack it more. I'm sure. Curious to know, you said that I was also interested in content marketing. And it's one of the first things I remember when I first created my online course, and my mate's like, cool, now how are you going to market it? And I went, what? Don't I just put it on the internet? And I had to learn about marketing and content marketing and implementing it. And I feel that all businesses, no matter what industry you're in, should do content marketing. I'm a huge advocate of it. Can you explain for everyone listening what content marketing is and all a different variety of forms and ways that people can implement it?
Absolutely. So as a, I don't know what the right word is, a warning, right? Like, this is a thing that there are whole podcasts about where like that's all they talk about week after week for hours at a time. But the short version is how a business uses educational material to teach their customers about what it is they do in a way that leads that client or potential person to come work with them, right? So if we're talking about this podcast, for example, right? You put out the podcast, you provide the folks listening with some useful content, you build that relationship with them in an educational way. You're helping educate your target customers kind of at large, and then hopefully they come become an ATA member, right? For FDSA, we put out the podcast, we talk about some of the same topics that the instructors cover in their courses. They provide free material, free educational material, in exchange for the idea that if you like what they have to say, maybe you'll invest in actually learning the full thing, right? Taking the 6-week course or signing up for the webinar or doing the workshop. A lot of the time that you said all the formats and whatever that kind of go into it. And a lot of the time that looks like blogging or podcasting or putting out free content on Instagram or Facebook posts. It can be any of the formats that are out there, video or text or images, or graphics or infographics. The key is really just you're putting out educational information as part of your marketing strategy. So content, right? All the different formats content can take as your way of marketing your business.
And you mentioned that part of that is building relationships. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. So I know when we kind of talked in advance, we were talking about like the pieces of marketing and dog training that align. And I think this is a really kind of key piece of that, right? So when you're talking about marketing in general, my approach to marketing is very similar to my approach to dog training. If you look at the people out there that you want to work with, the same way you would look at any learner, right? There are certain key pieces that you want to include in that eventual relationship. So first and foremost, you really want to remember that a relationship that's just about you is never going to be a really productive, great relationship, right? The other person's not going to choose to engage with you very much if you're only ever talking about you and yourself and what you have to offer, if you're being super salesy. You really want to make sure it's about them. Or in copywriting parlance, we tend to talk about it as using the word you a lot, right? So if I am writing something for my about page even, I'm going to position the information about me as how it matters to you and why it matters to you and what it has to do with you. So one of my favorite ways to do that is to use the phrase that means. So I'm going to share a little fact about me, and that means XYZ for you. So to give you a really concrete example, on my about page, I have experience as a dog trainer, and that means that I won't be talking about, you know, alpha dogs and dominance behaviors if I'm writing your copy, right? So that's a very clear way of how my experience impacts what I can offer you as a trainer for my business, from my business, right? That's the first piece of the relationship building, is knowing that a real relationship is not just about you. It's about the learner. It's about the dog and dog training. It's about the potential client when you're talking about your marketing. The second piece there is just as when working with a dog, we want to make sure that we're being reinforcing to the person or the animal or the learner that we're interacting with. So what does that mean when we start to think about marketing, right? In a training context, I think people really understand, dog trainers really understand the idea of increasing the likelihood of a given behavior by adding reinforcement, right? You look for what you want, you reinforce it, you add something good to the picture. In marketing, what that's going to look like has to be thought out pretty carefully. You have to be pretty strategic about that. So if we're looking at writing an email, maybe we're going to include something funny or entertaining or educational, right? How are we going to make sure when somebody opens that email, it's not something they immediately get rid of, delete, archive, send to spam? How can we make even those interactions reinforcing and engaging for the person on the other end? Maybe it's a joke. Maybe it's a really awesome tip that they haven't thought of before. Maybe if you have a group class where you've worked a whole bunch on teaching Go to Mat, it's here's five ways you can use the behavior you learned in class this week to improve your life, right? So super easy little bits of digestible content, but thinking about the fact that they need to be something that the person who's reading it is going to find useful or entertaining or helpful in some way, and building that all into your marketing, making sure that your interactions are reinforcing for the person who's receiving your emails or your Facebook posts or kind of anything you put out there. So my other example is about just making sure things are easy to use, right? So if you are trying to make your interactions reinforcing, you want to make sure you're not accidentally adding frustration to the picture. We know what happens if we add frustration to our dog training, right? Or maybe get barking. If we're in a really bad situation, maybe we get biting. When we think about adding frustration into a client or marketing relationship, you're going to get a client who then decides you are not the person they want to work with, right? So that person is going to leave your website if they can't find the information they want to look for. That person is going to unfollow you on Facebook if the things that you're sharing are things that are hard for them to understand or not interesting to them or not reinforcing in some way. But it also carries through to making sure that you're being super clear, right? So if you say, sign up for my class, XYZ on your Facebook post, and you don't have a link. I did this last week. And you don't have a link to where they can actually go sign up for the post. Guess what? They're probably not going to click on the link. And that's causing frustration in the target audience you're trying to reach, right? They maybe read the thing, were convinced, and then they're like, okay, but I don't know where the heck to go to sign up. That is not a good interaction. It's not rewarding. It's not how you build a relationship.
So I want to share some thoughts that all of that made me think about. and get your opinions on them, say if you agree with them, if you disagree with them, and hear them put in your words. I think for those listening, it's a topic that's probably pretty important for us as animal trainers who appreciate that the job market is limited, and therefore one of our view of only options is to start a business. But we're not marketers, so we have to jump in and figure it all out and fail forward. And it's not reinforcing for us all of the time. Another thing that we contend with, I think, is limited resources and time. And then you really have to schedule, carve out time to do all of this stuff. And the third thing is overwhelm and a pressure to do it right and then get it done and then fit everything else. And so it can quickly become an overwhelming, scary thing to embark on. So for those who are listening and maybe they want to implement some of this stuff and they want to, okay, cool, what is the behavior I want from this email? Where are my reinforcers? But holy crap, like I've only got an hour for marketing this week and I don't feel as good enough. Should I send it out or should I just like not send it out, leave it on my computer and like my audience doesn't get anything? Like where's the line for people trying to implement this stuff with being willing to fail, being, you know, sending something that's good enough out versus something that's perfect? Like how do we juggle those balls? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So my personal mantra when it comes to marketing as a whole is that you never want to do more marketing than you have to do. Right. I am a huge fan of minimalist marketing. You want to do exactly the amount of marketing you need to do to put money in your bank account and the amount of money that you need in your bank account. And you should know that number, and no more. There's nobody served by you doing more marketing and bringing in more people that you then can't serve. Right. So that's the first piece. You want to figure out exactly how much you actually need to do and what you need to bring in. And once you kind of find that that sweet spot, you don't need to grow it from there unless you're ready to take more clients and grow your business as a whole. So how do we do that? How do we stop from being overwhelmed? How do we stop from feeling like we have to do all the things? And I usually tell people you can get away with picking 3 to 5 things a month, and that's it. So you're going to pick three to five tactics, right? We don't have to do all the things. You don't have to be on every social media platform. It's much better to pick 1 or 2 or 3 things and do them consistently and learn how to do them well than to try and do all the things and spread yourself too thin and do some of them poorly. So how do you pick those things? You want to pick whatever is going to come most naturally, that you're going to feel the most successful with off the bat. And one of the ways that I tell people to identify that is think about where your recent clients have come from. If you know a recent client has come from Facebook, well, then obviously you're doing a fairly good job on Facebook. You've already gotten a little bit of reinforcement history, right, for the work that you're putting in there. Let's do more of that. Let's see if we spend a little bit more time there this month, if that'll lead more clients that we'd like to come in via that method. So that would be one of the methods for this month, right? And then maybe I also had a client come in when I sent out an email. So maybe that's my second method. And then maybe my third method, I really need to go through my website and just make sure it's up to date. That counts as a marketing thing. So those are my 3 things for this month. That's it. I'm going to focus on posting consistently on Facebook. I'm going to focus on sending out an email to the people on my email list. And I'm going to spend some time updating my website, right? So hopefully that doesn't sound like an overwhelming list. Maybe for some folks, even that's overwhelming. But the goal is to create something that you can kind of implement throughout the month. At the end of the month, you say, okay, did this work? Did this not work? If it didn't work, let's get rid of the pieces that didn't work. Let's put something else in their place. But let's stick to about 3 things, right? We don't want to try and do Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and Clubhouse and a podcast and redo our entire website. Like, it's really easy to kind of get sucked into that vacuum where you think you have to do all of the things all of the time. And exactly like you're talking about, it's like the perfect recipe for burnout. Whereas if you can identify a few tactics, and it does take a little bit of time, right, where you are finding that when you spend time there, it leads to actual clients, you actually get business from those sources, that'll build your own reinforcement history for doing it. And it'll lead to growing your business because you're actually bringing people in, you're spending time there, you're seeing a return on your investment. So that's kind of my my biggest tip when it comes to not getting completely overwhelmed with some of the stuff. I know there were some other parts to that question. So do you want to remind me what else in there you want me to address?
No, I don't. I want to ask more questions.
You can ask more questions. Go for it.
Well, I got lots. I like your contribution about being consistent. And I think it's been interesting for me from somebody who already had an established online business at the start of the pandemic to watch others kind of enter this conversation and this area of their business and work their way and fail forward in the same ways that I was doing when I started ATA, which was a lot of failure, like a whole year of failure before I sold my first $1 trial, and I told my wife we made a dollar that day, and she told me to get a job. and also recently, so bear with me. This question is a question, but it's long.
Go for it.
Also recently we did a promotion, and it was a promotion, but it was like we're changing websites and our prices and our currency is changing and our prices going up. That's information. If you want to lock in legacy pricing, do so now, and you can have it for forever and ever and ever until you cancel. We got about 80 new ATA members, which was really exciting. And I was asking people like, "Hey, welcome! Like, you know, what made you decide to join?" And the response was consistent among many of them that they'd been listening to the podcast show for years, and it really reinforced me for I'm always saying, "Got to be consistent. You got to show up. You got to show up. No matter how you feel, you got to show up." And so my question is. Nearly there. My question is, how do you know if it's working? Because I view what I do as a marathon. It's not a sprint. I'm not going to make a podcast and then we're going to get 10 people register for our membership. You know, they're going to listen to the show for years and then they're going to become a member. And also what I learned from the podcast you mentioned earlier that are specifically about this stuff is for someone that's interacting with your business, it might take them 7 times of seeing your stuff online before they go, oh, now I know who that person is. I have a relationship with them. It's reinforcing. It's easy. And I think they can solve my problem. Let me invest. How do you know if what you're doing is working if it does take that long?
That's a really big question. nothing like the easy ones, Ryan. So to step back a little bit and give you a little bit of marketing background, right? So a little bit of context for my answer. The short version is KPIs, key performance indicators, and knowing what those are. The longer answer is just like in dog training, we don't lump, we split. We're going to split. So when we talk about marketing, usually marketers think of all marketing as one of 3 steps in a process. So the very first step, the top of your marketing funnel, if we're talking in marketing language, is just getting somebody who's never heard of you before to know that you exist, taking a stranger and making them an acquaintance, right? So what does it take? What things in your marketing tactics list kind of fall into that bucket? And then in that bucket, what is the very next step they need to take? And so when we're looking at, is a thing successful? Okay, what is the very next step? So for you, for the podcast specifically, my guess would be a stranger has never heard of the podcast. Maybe they listen to an episode and they become a subscriber. So that would be that first step. So is your subscriber number going up? Podcasts are notoriously terrible for tracking metrics. I know this. I'm sure you know this. They're so hard to use for this example, but I'm going to go with it anyway. You know, are you seeing people go from casual listeners to actual subscribers? Is your subscriber number going up? Is your download number going up from week to week? If the answer to that is yes, you've got an indicator that it's probably working. That is probably your KPI, key performance indicator, for that marketing activity, right? So that's the thing that we're looking at to decide, is it working? Is it not working? Yes or no? And that sounds really complicated. But basically, if we put it in dog trainer language, right? So we're setting criteria and we're figuring out how successful our criteria is at being met, right? So that's kind of that piece. To back up and give you that context piece again. So, okay, so that's the first step, right? Stranger to knowing you exist, stranger to acquaintance. Once they know you exist, the next step in the marketing funnel, the next like bucket of marketing activities is getting to a place where you know that they exist. Because somebody can be a subscriber on the podcast and you may not know their name, you don't have their contact information. You kind of have a way of reaching out to them if you include something at the beginning or the end of the podcast and they happen to listen to that episode. But that's a little hit or miss, right? You don't have a lot of control over that situation. So the next piece of the funnel would be, okay, how do I get this person so that I have their name, I have their information, and if I have something that I think will be helpful for them, I have a way of sharing it with them beyond the podcast, beyond just the thing that they were there anonymous to me, right? So maybe that's trying to get people on an email list. That's usually the tactic, especially for online marketers, that comes next. So you get people from a casual thing where they know that you exist to getting on an email list. Now you can contact them when you have something new, when you have something exciting, when you have something educational or helpful for them. And then the final kind of step in that funnel, right? The final bucket, the three piece. So we've got stranger to acquaintance. Acquaintance to now you know that they exist. You have their contact information. You can reach out when you need to. And the final step is how do we take them from being that person who you have their information and actually gets to the point where they're ready to think about buying something from you. So making that purchase. And so that may be kind of within your email marketing plan, still that same tactic, still the same tool, just how you use it is a little bit differently. So maybe then you email them out and say, hey, sign up for an ATA membership, right? When you actually make that sales pitch. Now, sometimes people skip a whole bunch of steps in the funnel. That's fine. That is great. We love it when that happens. If somebody listens to the very first episode of the podcast and then immediately goes and signs up for a membership with ATA, like, woohoo, it's time for celebration. But when you're trying to evaluate if individual tactics are working, you want to split it down like that. You want to think about what's the very next step they need to take in getting closer to the bottom of that funnel and getting closer to making a purchase. What does that look like? How finely can I split that? And how many people are moving from step one to step two? So the example I usually use, which may be a little more useful than the podcast example, is a video that you share on Facebook, right? So maybe somebody sees the video. They've never heard of you before. You put a little bit of money into a Facebook ad and they see the video. It comes across their feed because Facebook shows it to them. They watch the video. Now they know that you exist. They know that you're out there and you're a thing and you offer dog training and maybe you could help them with their dog. So they decide to go follow you on Facebook. I did this with my hair salon. I've done this. Like there's a lot of instances and examples in my life I can point to where this is very similar to the process, right? So come across them on Facebook, follow them on Facebook. Ultimately, a need comes up in my life where I decide, yep, I want to do that thing. Maybe their dog jumps on, the example I usually use, the dog jumps on grandma or Aunt Mary, knocks her down. Well, now we've got a problem I need to solve, right? But because you're in my sphere, because I know that you exist, you're the person I'm going to turn to help me with that. So I'm going to hop over to your website, do a little looking through your website, and then hopefully sign up for a class or contact you for lessons. So now we've got the initial video. We've got following you on Facebook as kind of that middle piece of our funnel. And then we've got reaching out to you as that final step, right? Your website kind of played that final role. So to go back to your original question, how do we know what's being successful? How do we know what's working, what's not? We split it down into tiny steps, just like we would with our training. And we look at, are people moving along those steps and how many? And what do those percentages look like, right? And sometimes those numbers are super hard to have. Like you can't pull them for everything, but sometimes you can. So as much as possible, we try to look at the math.
So going with the relationship metaphor, it's kind of like, okay. Let's view it as dating. So like if you met someone like, okay. Yo, do you want to get married? And they're like, you know, there's going to be someone who's going to say yes, because, I mean, they made a TV show out of there, right? Married at First Sight.
Yeah.
But chances are people are going to look at you pretty strange. So, I mean, what do you do when you first meet someone of someone who you're romantically interested in? You don't just try to jump those steps. You get to know them. You invite them out. You nurture the relationship. You see if it's going to be mutually beneficial. And then you proceed. How do we know then? And I've always been an advocate of like giving people a huge amount of free value. The best stuff that we have to give, often let's give it out. How do we make a decision about what is free versus what is paid?
Okay, but I'm going to answer that. I wrote it down so I won't forget. But I want to go back to what you're saying about romantic relationship. So that is a super common metaphor in marketing. And the place where it falls apart, and this is super important to think about, you're not just dating one person. When you're talking about marketing, we are never just talking about a one-to-one relationship with one person. It's super valuable to recognize that we're trying to form relationships with our potential audience. But if we're only communicating with one person, that makes it or breaks it, right? Like if I only have one person who might buy from me, if they say no, I'm in trouble. You really want to be thinking about, in order to sell 50 spots, I need to reach, 20 people. Or, in order to sell, 5 spots, I need to reach 20 people, right? Like you're only going to get a percentage of people at each step who make it to the next step. And that's okay. That's expected. You are not failing as a human being when that happens. That is the way that it's meant to work. And the important piece is to make sure that you're kind of casting your net broad enough initially to bring in enough people in those early steps of your marketing funnel so that people can trickle down through it. And the percentage is big enough that you still have people who ultimately buy from you at the end. So that's my caveat. To go back to the free versus paid stuff, right? This is a huge question, especially online. And there are a couple of different strategies you can use. So the first one, and the one that has worked for a large number of the super famous dog trainers out there, is the share all the stuff, just share it in a special order. If you just put it all out there for free, there will always be a percentage of people who then say, okay, but my dog, right? Webinar presenters sometimes hate these questions, but my dog, blah, 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 blah. There will always be somebody who wants to work one-on-one to apply your advice to their specific situation. The nice thing about doing it that way, that approach, putting it all out there, and this is absolutely something I typically recommend people do. This is a strategy I like. The nicest thing about that is usually then when you bring in a client, they've already read all the free stuff. And so they already bought into your methods. They already bought into your advice. They're already coming to the conversation from an educated and informed place. And you can make so much progress so quickly because they already have that baseline knowledge and they can achieve really impressive results, right? So that's the first method. Just put it all out there. Give it all away for free. Don't worry about the money piece off the bat. The second piece, the second option, I guess, is being strategic with what you offer for free and what you offer as a paid resource. Now, this becomes more important, not just giving it all away for free, becomes more important if you're trying to work with people at scale. So if you're offering an online course, for example, right, if you just put the online course out for free, there's no difference between having the online course be for free and the online course where they're paying for it. Now you have a problem. So you want to instead think about either offering a sample. So you're offering, for example, like a page in the book, right? You're giving them a look at what the piece is. You're giving them a super detailed look at that piece, but you're not giving them the whole picture, right? You're not giving them the whole story cover to cover. You're giving them a chapter or a page, enough that they can get something useful out of it. They can apply it to their situation, their dog, their business, but not necessarily something where they're going to be able to solve their own problem because there are pieces that you have not shared, right? So in a dog training scenario, that might look like we're going to talk about how to teach go to mat and why it's valuable. The example that a lot of people like to hear is send the dog to the mat when the doorbell rings, right? That's a pretty cool thing. So maybe the page in that example is how do we start to teach a dog to go to mat on cue? But we're not going to go into for free how to then transfer that cue to the doorbell. If they want that piece, they're going to have to buy your course or they're going to have to hire you for help, right? And maybe they can find some of that out there for free, but that then goes back to, even if they can find it for free, at some point people will want your personal advice to customize it to their situation. The other, I think I skipped a piece in there about the for free. So let me go back for just a moment. The other piece about giving it for free is if you just put it all out there for free, that's a lot of stuff, right? It means like if you, for example, when I was first getting into, when I first adopted Riley and brought her home and was working through training with her, I stumbled across Denise Fenzi's blog. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with Denise, she's been blogging for, I don't know, probably the better part of 10 years. I am unusual in that I literally read the entire thing beginning to end. But most people wouldn't do that, right? Most people are going to be overwhelmed by the sheer amount of content that was available, and they will instead sign up for a course or sign up for a webinar or sign up for a workshop to get the abbreviated version that's kind of packaged together, right? So how do you teach HEAL, right? It's a perfect example. She has a whole course on that. But she also shares a lot of those details for free on her website if you want to spend the time to go through and find which pieces are applicable and which pieces are actually relevant to teaching HEAL versus all the other stuff that she covers, right? So that's the other side to giving it all away for free, is people will want the faster solution of just hiring you to tell them which parts are relevant. So, okay, so we've got that, give it all away for free. We've got the chapter or page option. You can also kind of look at it as sharing the, sharing just a little bit, right? Kind of sharing the, I usually phrase it as sharing the why and not the how. Right. So you can share what a skill, learning a skill can do for you, kind of the before and after picture. You have this situation. If you learn X, Y, and Z, you can get Y solution, and not tell them how to get from point A to point B. Now, keep in mind that can be a little more frustrating for the learner. Right. That is not quite as generous as some of the other stuff we've talked about, but it's absolutely a valid method. It's a method a lot of online course presenters and teachers use, is they share what you can accomplish using their methods and why that's super beneficial to you. And then if you want to learn actually how to do it, you have to hire them. So those are kind of three options, for lack of a better word, for kind of making those decisions and being strategic with them.
So is there a line, an invisible line, a gray line, a thin line between offering too much content and offering just the right amount of content? Can we offer too much free stuff?
I mean, my personal answer is no. The exception to that, I guess, if you're going to push me, is offering so much that you are spending all your time creating free stuff and you don't have time left over to create paid stuff. Right. So if you're putting all of your time and your effort, you only have, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours in a day, 365 days in a year. If you spend all of your time putting out free stuff, you'll have no time left over to make money. And that does matter. You do need to think about how you're going to run your business so that you can sell stuff, so that you can feed yourself, so that you can have a roof over your head. But kind of beyond that, I don't really think there's necessarily a line.
Now, I'm gonna,
you look thoughtful on that response. I'm not sure you agree with me.
No. It's because I was trying to figure out a transition, because I have a question and it's like just completely like everyone's like, oh, where's this conversation going? And then Ryan just completely changes it to something else. I was like, how do I transition that? That's what the fourful thing.
So we've now done it completely elegantly.
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably the finest moment of my podcast career. The question is, and it's something that was brought about by you saying the relationship metaphor is one that's frequently used by people. And I think I heard it on the Perpetual Traffic podcast show. I don't know if you've heard of that one. And there are lots of different podcasts on marketing, surprise, surprise. I mean, you would never have enough time to listen to all the podcasts on marketing. And so for someone who's wanting you to become a client of theirs, I do marketing and you have your own business and I want you to hire me to help you with marketing. And I know how to use Facebook, so I'm targeting you. My ads are in front of you. You've got some success from looking at my video. But I think it's quite confusing for dog trainers to know who to trust. I feel lucky that I'm working with Veronica Patelli because we've built a relationship over years, totally organically. Yeah. Like she was on our podcast and we got to know each other and we met in person. So I trust her. I have no questions about working with her, but I know that a lot of our members at ATA get confused and don't know how to choose someone to help them. It's a hard decision to make. What kind of things do you think, if we're looking for help with some of this stuff, we should be kind of trying to figure out about potential helpers?
Yeah. So this is a complicated. I feel like I've said that for everything you've asked me, that things are complicated questions. But and I hate it when guests do that to me. But so when you're trying to determine whether or not you should take somebody's advice, this is true regardless of whether we're talking about marketing or something else, right? My personal opinion is it advice they've taken themselves and has it worked for them? So if a lot of people, everybody has an opinion. Literally everybody has an opinion. We run a Facebook group with a couple thousand people in it where dog trainers are welcome to ask for advice, and they get advice. And they get advice from people who make $10,000 a year, and they get advice from people that make six figures a year, right? Like, and it's hard to differentiate between those two sometimes. But if you're in a situation where you're having a one-to-one conversation, or you're thinking about, should I follow this person or should I take this person's general advice, as much as possible, I want to look at, okay, are they doing that themselves and how well is that working for them? Is there any evidence behind what they're telling me? Kind of respond also to the part you said about there's so much stuff out there. There is not an industry with more free content in it than the marketing industry. marketers have bought in a big way to content marketing. And it means that anything you want to learn about when it comes to marketing, there is probably something out there on it for free. The big piece, at least for dog trainers, is looking at, okay, is this person even selling the same types of things, or are these strategies even relevant to the type of business I have, right? So a lot of your online marketers are talking about how to be an online marketer. If as a dog trainer, you do not want to run an online marketing business, that advice may not have much weight for you. You really want to know, how do I apply this, or is this advice tailored to somebody who's running a service-based business, somebody who's offering classes? And there are industries outside dog training, right, where that is true and where you could find advice that's tailored to that type of a business, or where somebody is offering a one-to-one service like private lessons or in-home lessons. And you really want to look for examples like that, and have they applied it to those types of industries or those types of businesses before, and what type of success have they seen? If all of their examples are digital-only things and you don't offer an online class, well, that's going to have limited success. And you, as somebody who is not a professional marketer, are going to be it's not necessarily impossible to say that you can't apply that advice in a way that's going to be helpful for your business, but you're going to have a much harder time, right? Taking advice that's not actually intended for somebody running the type of business you're running and applying it, figuring out which pieces you need to adapt. It's just like if somebody was to take one lesson with you and then try to open their own dog training business, right? There's just such a big hurdle there in terms of taking the little piece that they know and applying it to this much bigger scenario. And like some people, sure, they may be super successful at that. They may immediately understand the idea of behavior principles, and they may naturally be a fantastic trainer. And there are absolutely fantastic born marketers out there. I would argue that Denise at Fenzi is one of them. Just like naturally those things make sense in their brain. And so once the principles are introduced, it's very easy to just apply them and start running. That said, that's really the minority. And you really want to instead look for things that are being suggested and talked about in a way where it's clear that they apply to the type of business you're running. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Hopefully that's helpful for you, the listener, if you're contemplating getting some assistance in marketing or anything to do with your business. Hey, I was going to ask you a question that I'd sent you before we pushed record today, about 56 minutes in, I haven't even asked you it yet. But I'm curious if we've potentially covered a lot of it anyway. But the question that Melissa and I were going to talk about today was what marketing and dog training have in common. Five things. Have we covered all of those five things, or did you have things on your list that we haven't covered?
Not all of them.
Let's go. So start with number one, and if you've already talked about it, then we can kind of skip over that and go through the list.
Absolutely. So we touched on number one already, which is it's not about you, right? When you're talking about marketing or dog training, in dog training, it's always about the learner. In marketing, it's always about the client or the potential client. You want to make sure you're not focusing too much on yourself, what your goals are and what you want. You're really looking at what they are getting from the situation. Number two, be reinforcing. We talked about this one a little bit again already too, right? This idea that at least in our community, we believe that increasing the likelihood of a given behavior is we add reinforcement. And so that is also true when you're talking about your marketing. You want to be kind in your marketing. You want to be reinforcing in your marketing. You want to be generous in your marketing. And those things will help you bring in clients. Three, at least in the dog sports training world, we have this concept of engagement where we start with Denise has a whole class on this in the dog training world. I'm going to try to summarize it. So the basic idea is that you start by controlling the training session, right? Like it's your job initially to get the dog, the learner, it's true of anything really, to opt in. It's your job to say, look at how interesting this can be. Look at how fun this can be. Look at the cool stuff we can do together. And that ultimately, at least in sports training, you want to get it to the place where the learner is pushing you. The dog is actually pushing you for the opportunity to work. They want to interact with you. You've proven that you're so reinforcing that they are looking for opportunities to offer you the thing that you do together to get that relationship going. And so that is also true in marketing. Initially, you're going to have to do a lot of work on the front end of the relationship to prove to somebody that your business is of value to them, what you have to say is of value to them, the information that you provide them is of value to them. But in the long run, if you're doing it well, if you're building that relationship well, you'll get to a place where they are almost insisting that they want to hire you, insisting that they want to work with you and nobody else, right? I actually had a fantastic sales call earlier today where somebody contacted me. And I won't say her name because I didn't ask for her permission, but where she reached out and she said, look, like, I know your work. I know the stuff that you do. I know how you're involved in the community. I want to work with you for this. And I don't care that you haven't given me an estimate yet. We haven't, talked much about my specific project yet, but I know that you're the person I want to work with. Right. And so that was our very first phone call, right? You can get to that place, and you get to that place by putting out useful resources, by putting out helpful educational material, by being a valuable resource for the folks who ultimately will form the community of people who work with you. That's three. So engagement. So you've got, it's not about you, be reinforcing and engagement. Four we haven't talked about. So I'm actually going to skip four, go to five, and then come back to four because four is a little bit more chatting. Five is what we started to talk about with making it reinforcing for yourself. This one's a little bit different than all the others. In order to make sure that you are opted in, so that you are getting some reinforcement out of all this effort that goes into marketing and running your business, ideally your reinforcement, your own reinforcer for doing this work is that you're making money, right? So you are making the sale, you're hearing from people how helpful it is, they're choosing to work with you, and you are seeing success in your business as a result of that work. So click, you get a sale. Click, you get a sale, right? So that's your reinforcer there. So if we think about how do we get that, and I think this is something where folks don't think about it enough because it's counterintuitive. You get there by standing out. So Seth Godin has this whole book about being a purple cow. And the idea there is if you're traveling down a country road and there are cows in a field and you see cow, 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 you kind of blur them out, right? They stop being phenomenal. They stop being interesting. You don't care. But if there's a purple cow, you go, oh, it's a purple cow. Now, if all the cows were purple, that would suddenly become boring. But because one cow is purple, that's the interesting thing, right? That's the thing that catches your attention. Now, that same thing is true in reverse, right? So if you take a normal cow and you put it somewhere unexpected, like in the middle of Central Park or in the middle of Times Square in New York City, that's also going to catch your attention. So the key kind of piece there, right, is that you want to figure out as a trainer, how are you different? What is your point of differentiation from the other trainers around you? When you're competing locally for business, so when there are only 10 trainers in your local area, that's easier to do than when you're looking at online, where you're suddenly competing with literally every trainer who offers virtual services. But it's still worth thinking about. So it may be enough locally to be the only positive trainer in town. That may be your differentiator. If there are lots of positive trainers, you may need to go a step beyond that to stand out. You may need to become the puppy expert, right? I rock puppy stuff. We offer all sorts of in-depth puppy help. Maybe to flip that on its head, your specialty is behavior stuff. Well, all the trainers in the area refer their behavior cases to you because you are the behavior case person. You work with dog-dog aggression. You work with dog-people aggression, whatever that piece is, right? Figure out what that differentiator is, that thing that you really enjoy, that thing that you see the most enjoyment out of working with and figure out how you can make that a bigger piece of your business so that becomes your differentiator. So that's five, but we did it before four. So I'm going to go back to four. Four is set them up for success. This is a huge thing, right, in our training planning and our dog training. And it's also true when we're talking about our potential clients. So I shared the example earlier of mentioning a class and a course that I was offering and not including the link. Little things like that make a huge difference. It seems super obvious, but it's not always obvious if you haven't thought about it, right? So you want to make sure that you are super clear about what you want somebody to do next, what the natural next step you want them to take. You're talking about success, splitting it down, figuring out what those next steps are. We want to think really carefully about that. And in all of our marketing, encourage people to do that next step very clearly. They've done some studies, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I should have pulled them up. Where they A/B tested. So in marketing, you can show half the people that come to your website one thing and half the people another thing. So they A/B tested copy on a button, so the text on a button. And the difference between when you say click here for blah versus just, you know, blah or whatever, when you specifically say the words click here, the number of people that actually click goes through the roof. There's a huge difference in explicitly asking for what you want versus kind of implying it and assuming people will figure it out themselves. So you really want to make sure that you're setting people up for success by giving them that information so that then they can take the appropriate next action. And that's true on your website. That's true in your Facebook posts. That's true in all of your marketing. That said, and this is why I said there's a little bit of conversation here, like you're talking about with that first date. When you are looking at a marketing tactic where the majority of the people who are interacting with you on that format or in that platform are people who don't know you yet, your call to action should not be then go buy the course, give me money. You want it to be something smaller, like go subscribe or add me to XYZ or go download a podcast or here's a free resource you can go click on to check out, right? You want to think about what the next little step is, split it down instead of trying to jump straight to buy the thing. But you do want to be explicit. You do want to be super clear. You want to make sure that you are communicating well what that step should be.
Awesome. We have number one, it's not about you. Number two, be reinforcing. Number three, start with engagement. Number five, make it reinforcing for yourself. And number four, set people up for success. Sounds like positive reinforcement, animal/dog training to me.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear it. That was the intention. Now you can cut all except for that question out of the podcast and hit publish, huh?
Well, I have a large list of questions here, but we don't have time, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
There is a question I do like to ask everyone, though, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it, and feel free to stay on the marketing subject or deviate off into some other area of animal training. But I'm curious what you want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years in our community.
Absolutely. That's a great question. And I am going to stick in both the dog training and the marketing realm for this. We started DTU kind of with this whole DTU's dog trainers umbrella, which we haven't talked much about today, but kind of the focus behind DTU was truly to help dog trainers understand the business part of their business so that they can be more successful. We just completed, and I'm still analyzing it. The report isn't out yet. It will be by the time people are listening to this. So we just completed a survey of the industry, and I had over 200 people participate. I think it was 260 or something like that. People respond who are all professional dog trainers. And the number of people in our industry who are still making what I would not even consider enough to live off of is really scary for the future of our industry, especially for our positive trainers out there. There are a lot of folks in the industry who are still making, you know, they're working full time and they've been in the industry for 5 years and they're still only making, you know, maybe 10 grand, maybe 20 grand a year. And I don't want anybody to feel bad if they hear that, right? That's not the point. The point is it's possible for you to make a lot more than that. It's possible. And most of them say that they would like to be making, you know, $60,000 a year, $70,000 a year. I'm talking USD. I'm sorry. But you know, people say they'd like to be making those numbers. Those are totally achievable goals. They really, truly are. And so what I would like to see happen in our industry in the next 5 to 10 years is see more of our positive trainers learn those pieces and how to get there. Because if you are not achieving enough financial success, you don't have to be a millionaire, right? But if you're not achieving enough financial success to stay in this long term, you're going to burn out and that benefits nobody. We want the positive trainers in our community to thrive, to do well with their business, to grow their business to a place where they are not just comfortable, but they have enough time and money to invest back into mentoring other trainers and helping grow the industry overall, because that is how positive training spreads. So that's where I want to see the industry go. That's where I'd like to see trainers overall go. And that's what we're trying to do with DTU.
So do you recommend that trainers should learn to do all of this themselves, or should they hire someone to do it for them? And how, if we go to hire people and if we're not earning much at the moment, obviously that's a significant decision and potentially not even a viable decision. Mm-hmm. How should we view spending that money on our business? Is it an expense or is it an investment? Is it both? Is it something else?
Oh boy.
By the way, we're out of time.
It depends. Right.
Last question.
So it depends, right? It depends on what your personal goals are for you and for your business. If your goals are that you want to run, well, first of all, let me take a step back. So my business partners at DTU are Michael and Jamie Bedell and Christina Hartgrove. And Michael and Jamie successfully grew they've written about this publicly, so I don't mind sharing numbers. They successfully grew a six-figure dog training business with just the two of them. And Michael was the only one actually doing training. So one trainer and one person doing some of the admin stuff. And initially, Jamie was going to most of their lessons with him. So we're talking well within your 40-hour work week, right? So it's possible to do just solo without hiring a team. Or with hiring a part-time person or hiring, you know, a little bit of help. That said, Jamie has a business degree. that definitely helped inform how she made her choices and how she approached setting up their business, right? They made some significant changes. They learned some significant things that really kind of helped them reformat how they structured their business and allow them to accomplish those numbers. But the short version is it's possible. When it comes to hiring help and deciding whether you're investing or whether you're spending, I don't believe in investing if you can't afford it. I don't think anybody should spend money they don't have, unless you are very sure that person is going to bring in more money for your business. It's definitely a decision that takes some careful number crunching when you're looking at hiring help. I have a good friend right now who's in the process of hiring her first full-time employee. So she has an independent contractor who works for her as a trainer, and she's looking to bring on an actual employee who will train. And it's very much a catch-22 where you have to look at the numbers. You have to say, do I have enough demand that I can fill this person's schedule? And when they join the team, you know, even if I have to take a cut a little bit in my personal paycheck initially, do I think I can fill their schedule and then eventually get to a place where I'm also filling my schedule again? And if you don't feel fairly confident that you can do that based on your current reserves, based on your current income, I would probably not hire. I will say that I finally hired help for my own business after a long time not hiring help. And it can be amazing. It can feel so good. When you make a good hire, it can be life-changing. I am not telling you anything you don't know, Ryan. I brought on a marketing assistant last year, and then this year I've brought on a few additional team members in different roles. And having them on board to help me make sure all the bits and pieces happen and the bits and pieces that need to happen, it has truly been world-changing for my business. And for my stress levels and for my to-do list. But it changes it, right? It doesn't necessarily remove things from your life. It changes the things you're focusing on. So for me personally, I made the decision to hire. And now that I've grown from one person who works for me part-time to multiple people work for me part-time, I'm having to rebalance my schedule again because I'm realizing how much of my time goes to managing other people and how much of an investment that is to be the boss I want to be for the people that work for me, which is not a small thing or a small conversation. But that's its own thing, right? So don't look at hiring people as a way to just get stuff off your plate because that's unlikely to happen. You really want to think about, can the business afford this? Or when I'm hiring help, are they taking things off my plate that then I will be able to go make more money doing something else? So for example, my VA very rarely does billable work. But she takes things off my plate that now I can go make what I make an hour, which is more than what she makes an hour, for the business while she's doing something else, right? And so your price structure needs to be aligned so you can do that. Because if I'm not making enough that when I go out and work those hours, I can pay myself and I can pay her, that's not going to work. But as long as my price structure is aligned, so I make enough money when I go out and work for those 3 hours and she does work for me for those 3 hours, then that's when you want to hire. That's when you want to bring on help. That's when you want somebody else to do the thing for you, is when it's going to save you time that you can spend making money. Does that help? I feel like that's a really convoluted answer.
I've intentionally stopped making notes so I don't ask any more questions. So I'm going to say... I'm going to say yes and offer an invitation for you to share with people where they can go to if it doesn't help and they do want to find out more and they do want to get in touch, where can they go online to find you and all of the things?
Yeah, you mentioned it in the intro, my personal business website where I do website design and logo design and some marketing consulting is Click and Repeat. If you want there's some free stuff up there. There's free resources and I blog and my awesome marketing assistant blogs for me and there's all sorts of good stuff there. If you want more of the business stuff, less of the marketing stuff, Dog Trainers Umbrella, which is just dogtrainersumbrella.com, has all of the businessy stuff from me and from Michael and Jamie and from... Christina. So there's lots of free content there also. And then I am super involved in a bunch of different Facebook communities. We talked about not spreading yourself too thin. Facebook's the thing I'm all in on. So there's a whole bunch of Facebook groups that I'm part of. But the best one to join for general advice is the Dog Trainers Umbrella group. So it's DTU. Oh, let me look it up and actually give you the right name so people can actually find it without getting frustrated. Hold on 1 second. I know it's DTU:R+ something. DTU:Marketing and Running an R+ Dog Business. So that is the Facebook group that I would recommend hopping into. And we all spend lots of time in there. So it's a great resource for this kind of stuff.
Wonderful. And we will, of course, link to all of that in the show notes as well. So you can head there on the Animal Training Academy website and find links to all of this stuff. Hey, Melissa, this has been so much fun. So from me, Phoebe Dog here next to me, and on behalf of everyone listening, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been great.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.